Hello and good evening. I'm Hafiz Marzuki. You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Tonight on the show, we'll delve further into the youth and sports policies, more specifically, the progress made by the Youth and Sports Ministry over the past year. We're going to delve into what have the progress has been made and what's next for the ministry. And I'm delighted to have with me tonight the Deputy Minister of Youth and Sports, Adam Adli Abdul Halim. He's also the Member of Parliament for Hang Tuah Jaya in Melaka, and he's also the current Keadilan or PKR Youth Chief. Adam, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you could spend some time with us tonight.
Glad to be back in this very studio.
Yeah,
I think it was my first time.
Yeah, I think the last time it was a public debate,
correct,
right, over here, before the elections.
Before and
so,
the elections.
So many things
of
have
the party.
So many things have happened since then.
Yep.
And of course, over the past few weeks, of course, there were rumours about cabinet reshuffle back then.
I mean, there was a cabinet reshuffle.
There was a cabinet reshuffle. And also, I would like to congratulate you because you managed to retain. As we know, almost a third of the deputy minister positions were reshuffled around, and you are one of the few who actually maintain in that. So, the first question that I would ask before we move on to other things within the Youth and Sports Ministry is that, were there any moments during your tenure where you thought that there could be uncertain, where you may be reshuffled to another portfolio? What's your response?
I mean, it is our first year, and I mean, especially for me, not just as the first term deputy minister, but also a first term MP. So a lot of things out there is new for me. So when cabinet reshuffle happens, to me that I'm, to me it's just part and parcel of the job. I mean, the job description literally say that you are prepared to serve anywhere, everywhere, so at whatever capacity.
So you always think about doing the job for as long as you can, but you're always prepared for the worst.
Exactly. Plus, for the past 1 year, we believe that we have been facing a lot of challenge, especially implementing a lot of new approaches and try to introduce new policies at the ministry. And I remember my first day, my very, very first day at the ministry, I was already under attack. So with that in mind, I believe that one cannot always be confident that, but alhamdulillah, I believe that we are now being given the opportunity to continue serving the ministry, and definitely it is a good opportunity for us to start implementing things that we have learned for the past 1 year.
Especially you mentioned just now, you're a first time MP, you know, first time deputy minister. In fact, YBM Hanna is also a first time minister, although she's been in the political scene.
Definitely she has more experience.
Long enough. What was the learning curve like? I mean, if you could share.
I believe that both of us found ourselves in a position where we have to start learning everything the moment we took over the office. I mean, Webby Hanna definitely has more experience in women's empowerment, with her experience back then as the deputy minister for KPW, while me, I'm new, definitely new at this. So even though we try our best to come out with something, to figure out things that we need to do, especially by communicating directly with our stakeholders, we figure that we have to learn more beyond what is already within our reach, what is already within our current ecosystem. We have to start figuring out things, and traveling actually help a lot. And we start comparing whatever policies that we have right now with the policies being introduced in, say, our neighboring countries. So yeah, there are two parts of the ministry, definitely sport, which is a bit more straightforward, and then youth, which is very vague actually.
I mean, everything is youth, right?
Everything is youth. So you have to be able to grasp the idea and learn new things every day, and bear in mind that you don't know everything. Even a business as straightforward as sport, there are still a lot of intricacies, so many things that you have to figure out, and so many things that you have to. I mean, for the past 1 year, we have tried everything. We had we figure out that we can only take a certain route. Mm-hmm. So what did we do? We try to learn about the grassroots development and to focus more on making sure that we, within the capacity that we have, we'll be able to cater to the needs of especially the development itself. I think that is the main responsibility of government. Definitely, we know that the high performance need our support, best support, but we have a role and responsibility to make sure that the sports development is there.
As you mentioned, programs
should be focused on the people.
Yeah, a couple of things that you've underlined there. Yeah. What have both of you, what are the reforms that has been undertaken over the past year? I understand that there was a report like over 20 reforms were made. But what would you say were the highlights?
I would not... I mean, on the highlights would be the programs. People, because people, the only way that people can connect and people can actually observe the very reform that you want to implement will be through the programs. But the bigger picture of it would be what are the main themes of it? When you say reform, I mean, it's not change for the sake of changing something. I mean,
If it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, dictatorship to democracy. Yes, we can call it reform. But can you also say the same about, say, for example, democracy to dictatorship? That will not be considered as reform. So therefore, there are certain principles apply to when we say we can introduce changes in the system, in the structure, in the approaches. But where do we draw the line? How do we make sure that it can be seen as a reform effort that can be said to be very effective reform? So we try to figure out. One, for example, would be the strengthening of the sport ecosystem in the sports department. Definitely, we have to be able to connect the diverse elements of sports, especially among the sports associations, not just at the top level, the national level, but also down there, at the district level.
Sorry to interrupt, but you know, when you said about dealing with sports association, there's a caveat, like government cannot interfere into sports associations
because
they'll get banned. But how do you approach that sort of, you know?
We have
challenge.
We have what we call as the PJS, Pesuruh Jaya Sukan. Mm-hmm. That's where the regulation, the regulatory framework is. So it's not entirely true to say that we have no say at all. Mm-hmm. We definitely cannot interfere with the
administration. I mean, you can't choose your own.
We cannot choose the candidates.
Who's
going to be the head of one's association? But we can at least what we do will be engage with them, address their problems, learn about their challenges, and help them in terms of that. That's where our role is, definitely. This is why we can see that for the past 1 year, I think YB Hana, for instance, have been connecting and taking advices more than one can possibly say compared to maybe in the past
previous administration
from the sports associations. I mean, from time to time, we will be meeting with the sports associations so that we know, because we know that we... That's not how it works. Sports should be independent. They have the autonomy. And definitely the legal framework always indicate that the government's role is exclusive to providing the support system, ecosystem, development, not dictating or, you know, on the more strategic level of the administration and the growth of the sports. So we have to be able to empower the sports association, because it's not the job of the minister to train the athletes.
Yes, it's only to manage the training of athletes.
Yeah, it's only to manage and make sure that the country can provide the ecosystem and the legal framework that is good and effective enough so that sports associations can grow.
I would like to touch more on sports, but before we delve further, I think listening to you explaining about the intricacies on just dealing with sports association, what's the thinking behind approaching this youth and sports ministry? Because it's essentially two portfolios that are linked, but it's like one is very niche sports, and the other is just like all encompassing. So how do you what's the thinking behind this approach of this ministry?
Tell you about it. I mean, we had to sit down so many times just to figure this out. I mean, is I'm not saying it's lazy, but to some people it'll be like just link the youth to the sports activities and programs.
It's not that simple.
But it's not that simple. I mean, the challenges of faced by the youth. Just as difficult, complex, and definitely we wouldn't say solvable by the capacity of our ministry. The economic challenge is there, definitely, the number one challenge. How about the social? And how about the many other things, housing, jobs, opportunity, wage, education. So this cannot be solved through
one ministry,
even though definitely people would say that, yes, it's not your job to solve this problem, but it is your job to represent them. So we do that. At the same time, we want to make sure that we be able to celebrate their achievements. We are able to inspire them to thrive. And my mantra will always be that the youth must be very independent. I mean, we are now dealing with a generation where a certain quality can be applied to them. More, they are now at the age of AI, not just internet anymore, it's at the age of AI.
Just now you mentioned
it's not easy going.
It's not easy being youth in this age.
It's not easy being youth at this age. With social media, peer pressure, economic pressure. I mean, I would say that it takes a lot more than just whatever programs that we have right now. But as I said earlier, we have a responsibility to make sure that the youth can at least live in an ecosystem where they know. This country celebrates them, wants to help them, and definitely there are so many rooms for their potential to be, you know, explored and supported.
So when you talk about, you know, developing youth, I understand that KBS has underlined a couple of initiatives.
Correct.
Maybe you could share what were the new introduction means to the programs and you know, anything that there's even a program to increase political literacy.
Correct.
If I understand, maybe you could share a bit more about that.
Okay, the number one thing that we do would be that to provide some platforms for the youth to be themselves. So we had a very successful program dated way back in 1994.
Rakan Muda.
It's gone through three phases before we came in, and now it's in the fourth phase. Where we reintroduce Rakan Muda. It's always been there. Rakan Muda is always there.
During our time.
Even during our time. But what do we do? We introduce what we call Gaya Hidup, lifestyles. Last time it used to be quite general, but this time we have to make sure that we are able to provide more inclusive yet specific programs, the lifestyle. So hence how today we have Rakan Democracy for those who wants to increase their literacy in politics and democracy. We have Rakan Prihatin, those who love volunteerism and helping others. Rakan Bumi, we can increase the awareness and involvement of youth in the preservation of our environment, as well as to address the current conversation about climate change and everything.
So it's a lot more niche and
exactly.
and a lot more vertical.
And how do we do this? We do not depend on just the government's agencies, but we also depends on our strategic partners. So we know there are many good stakeholders in certain areas, in these areas that we talk about. There are many good organizations that we can always work with, so that they can be the one that will efficiently and effectively empower the youth who have some passion in these 10 lifestyles that we talk about.
Okay. Other than the Rakan Muda, I understand there's also the Sekolah Rukun Negara.
Correct.
Which is, I believe it's another, well, I know
Sekolah Rakan
came from all the way from BTN, but I think in its current iteration, there's no political indoctrination has been, but what made it different this time around?
Well, I can say this, that Sekolah Rukun Negara was my pet project. It was first started, I believe, in 2018, 2019, under the youth ministry of that time, especially under then Deputy Minister Stephen Sim. I remember that he called upon few people, good people, think about a program to empower youth, especially in their political literacy. And it was drafted, among others, by me, the first syllabus of it. And then I didn't know what happened to it. It wasn't even called Sekolah Rukun Negara, but the program kicked off, but not truly in a large scale. It wasn't even made flagship program, especially after Stephen and Sadiq left the office. So when I got the chance now, so I said, we really need it now more than ever, because we have already implemented Undi 18. We know that there have been so many things being discussed during the past election pertaining the youth participation as well as the youth role that they play during the past election, and the way the youth are, you know, shaping the opinion. So we figure that we have to take some responsibility in approaching the youth and tell them, look, we love that you want to talk about politics. Let's do this in a way that will be fair to everyone. And of course, government will be some lack of confidence in trusting government to do such thing, political education. People would simply just say, this is just another platform to brainwash the youth, just as you said, in the form of BTN in the past. But I made sure that we went all out to reach out to everyone, talk to everyone, get the different political parties to participate in the early discussion of the program, and I'm happy to see that the program grew for this 1 year at least, because we only begin in July. We launched it in July because we needed the time to make sure that the syllabus is fair, as objective as possible, and meet the expectation. Because this is not the place where we tell government is good, opposition is bad. This is where we tell them, like, look, there are ways to figure out politics. There are certain things that you need to know, things that you might not be able to learn in school, about the government, about our economy.
About the parliamentary system.
About the parliamentary system, about the different role played by MPs, ADUNs and city councillors. That's what we do. And we get the opposition party to give some of their input, because we do introduce the participants with the political landscape as well of the country. Who is UMNO? Who is PKR? Who is PAS? Who is DAP? What would be the background, the history, the way? So that it excites them, and it somehow
Help them make an informed decision.
Yes, exactly. Help them make informed decision based on, at very least, a certain common knowledge about politics, as in governance and all. So now we have around 110,000 participants since it was launched in July. now we are moving towards the phase two. We are working with different agencies. We prepared the program to be not just organized by government agencies, but also can be organized by CSOs and youth groups and youth associations out there.
Okay.
So that's how we do. I mean, we hope to see that the phase two, where the youth, the participants, will now be challenged with much more critical values and ideas, so we can start seeing some better result and better literacy of politics. Mm-hmm. We want to produce more opinion makers. We don't want the social media to be filled with people who just talk about politics without understanding the basic values of it, without some of them to the point where they kind of not considering the effect of what they say out
there. Yeah, especially, you know, with all the extremism that is coming out.
We have to address extremism.
I think I could talk to you more about youth, but you know, we have to also touch on the sports development, as I've said. And of course, you have only touched about the sports association, but I'm so very interested in this Road to Goal program.
Oh, yes.
What is the thinking for this particular program? Because, if correct me if I'm wrong, it's heading towards Paris, which is Paris Olympics, which is next year. But how do you look at sports development? Mm. Because it's not just medals and championships, right? How do you look at it?
When we say that sport is quite straightforward, the basic rule would still be about winning. Sports is competition. It's about winning. And the basic rule of it would still be that the only way that you can evaluate of how effective your program is would be how many definitely the medal tallies. So we have to meet that expectation as well. Next year, 2024, will be a very busy year in the sport department as well. We know that there will be Olympic. There will also be the Asia Cup in Qatar, where we got there.
Yeah.
We have a few other huge events happening, M6 of the eSport and all, where we are the host country. So we figure that next year, we, apart from what we already doing now with the development of the grassroots, we also need to address on the on meeting the expectation and meeting the target of making sure that we'll be able to achieve something. And hence why a program like Road to Goal is introduced, so that we can have a concentrated effort in helping and supporting our athletes who will be competing in the next Olympic. Not just in, but Road to Goal, it has now been expanded to not just Paris, but also LA in 2028. So we have some ample time
to build the runway. But I understand that Road to Goal is probably for the more established or those within the system. But how do
from
we develop
podium
our talent
to Road
pool?
To Goal.
How do we develop or enlarge our talent
right
pool?
First of all, we have to make sure that people will be able to play sport. That's how you enlarge the talent pool, by developing the grassroots. At the very least, would be to provide more facilities first, to have more people play something that just get them to play,
And see where the interests are
in their districts and all, and see where the interests are, and then make sure that when they figure it out, the sport need to be made accessible. So the accessibility to sport will mainly be about the facilities, as well as probably how do they go beyond casual
display.
In the competition, now we have, so what do we do now? So we figure that we have to start working with different ministries. So hence why the HLC, the High Level Committee, was formed through Jawatankuasa Cabinet Pembangunan Sukan. So we now working closely with KPM, KPT, even KPN, and a few others, so that we can make sure that we have a very substantive and by extension effective policy on sports that can be implemented not just by the Ministry of Youth and Sport, but also by different ministries at school level, for example. That's where the biggest talent pool is, actually. For example, a few changes that we were able to achieve. We know that combat sport mm-hmm. is one of the best. We'll always be able to bring home some medals, mm-hmm. Be it gold or silver in SEA Games or Asia Games and all. So we figure that we have to elevate combat sport. And in school, they are not considered as sports. Mm-hmm. They are considered as
Koke,
as in uniform body.
Uniform body, yes.
Right. So So those who are very active in taekwondo, karate, or even silat, they will not be able to compete
in the
school system, the school ecosystem. Footballers or athletics will have the opportunity to compete in, say, MSSD or MSSM, where most of the talents are being scouted there. But how about those who are involved in martial arts, in combat sports? Mm-hmm. So this is, I think, this is one of the one of the things that we managed to do so that we can now expand the talent pool for combat sports, at least.
Okay. Thank you so much, Adam, for your time. That's all we have for this episode of Consider This. I'm Hafiz Marzuki. Thank you for watching and good night.